This podcast is brought to you by Luca Mele, front-end architecture, team leadership, and technical consulting. Over 16 years of experience turning complex challenges into simple, effective solutions. Learn more at lucamele.ch.
Imagine you are the best developer on your team. You know, you just write code faster than anyone else.
Right, you're just flying through the ticket backlog.
Exactly, and your logic is flawless, and your pull requests are just, well, they're a thing of beauty. So naturally, management notices this.
Oh, of course they do.
Yeah, and they pull you into an office and they promote you to tech lead. Congratulations. But you are now the single biggest threat to your own company's success.
It is honestly the most counterintuitive trap in the whole software industry.
It really is.
Because the very skills that, you know, earned you that promotion are the exact same skills that will completely sabotage your new role.
Right. And navigating that trap is basically what this deep dive is all about today.
Yeah.
Because whether you're currently managing a team, or maybe you're aiming to step into a leadership role soon, or honestly, if you're just trying to decode the weird dynamics of your own engineering squad, we are going to look at some actual cheat codes for team effectiveness.
We are. And it's based on some really great material.
It is. We're pulling this from a fascinating breakdown called Leading Front-End Teams, What Actually Works at Scale. And it's written by a front-end developer and tech lead named Luca Mele.
Yeah, his background is super interesting.
It really is, because he has this this really unique vantage point. He started out leading these scrappy, tiny teams of three in a startup agency in Bergamo, Italy.
Right.
But then he eventually scaled up to manage these massive cross-functional squads at huge financial giants, places like AXA Switzerland and Migros and UBS.
And, you know, that scale is what makes his insights so highly calibrated.
Also.
Well, when you move from a tiny three-person agency to a massive enterprise, I mean, the tech stacks change entirely.
Oh, for sure.
The compliance layers alone just become completely suffocating. But what Luca found was that the underlying patterns for actually making developers succeed, they remain remarkably consistent across the board.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with that trap we just mentioned at the top, the tech-led bottleneck.
Right, the classic hero developer syndrome.
Exactly. What does that actually look like on the ground?
Well, when you first step into leadership, there's this immediate identity crisis. Because as an individual contributor, your entire value to the company was based purely on your output.
You architected solutions quickly.
Yeah.
You shipped.
Exactly. So when you suddenly become a lead, your instinct is to just maintain that velocity. And you do that by either, you know, doing the complex work yourself or basically dictating exactly how every single line of code should be written by your team.
Right. Because in your head, you can already map out the entire application state and the whole component tree before a junior developer has even finished, like, spinning up their local environment.
Precisely. You see the solution instantly. But if every technical decision has to flow through your brain first, you create a massive single point of failure.
You become the bottleneck.
You do. You become the bottleneck for shipping any new features. And more importantly, you completely rob your team of the opportunity to make decisions or struggle with edge cases and, you know, actually mature as engineers.
Yeah, Luca gives a really tangible example of how to break this habit, actually, from his time at AXA.
Oh, right. The style guide team.
Yeah. So he was founding their style guide team, and their mandate was to build this massive cross-framework component library. And the pure hero developer instinct there would be to just personally design the architecture for every single button, every modal, every data table, just to ensure it's pristine.
But he took the exact opposite approach.
He did.
Instead of micromanaging the code, he just established the non-negotiable boundaries.
Right.
Like, he decided they would use web components, which ensured the library remained framework agnostic.
Essential for a big company.
Exactly. And he established strict documented patterns for the API contracts, and he mandated that accessibility standards were just absolute non-negotiable.
It's sort of like, it's like bowling with the bumpers up.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, like, you aren't remote controlling the bowling ball down the lane for them. You're just ensuring the project doesn't go straight into the gutter. You define those constraints, and then you give the engineers maximum freedom to own the end-to-end implementation inside that safe space.
What's fascinating here is the emergent outcome of that strategy.
Yeah.
The final product was actually demonstrably better than what Luca could have built on his own.
Really? Just by stepping back?
Yeah. By stepping back and kind of letting go of his ego, he allowed different developers to bring in entirely diverse perspectives. They started spotting accessibility edge cases and weird state management quirks that he honestly hadn't even considered.
That's amazing.
And he mentions using this exact same philosophy later at UBS, where he was managing 13 developers across totally different domains. He sets the guardrails for how applications are structured, but the individual squads make their own implementation decisions.
Okay, that sounds great in theory, but I mean, I have to push back here a little. If you are the tech lead, your neck is ultimately on the line for the quality of the product, right?
It is.
So if you step back and just let the team build the components without dictating the logic, how do you prevent them from just shipping absolute garbage? Like, you can't just close your eyes and hope for the best.
No, it's not a blind leap of faith at all. You still maintain that quality control, but you shift where that control actually happens.
Okay, where does it happen?
You move it away from dictation during the planning phase, and you pour all of your leadership energy into the code review phase.
Wow, okay. That requires a massive reframe, though.
Yeah.
Because in so many engineering cultures, code reviews are just treated as this tedious chore.
Oh, completely.
It's just a quick scan to catch typos or syntax errors before merging a PR into production.
Right, but if your code review is just about finding bugs, your automated testing suite is inadequate.
Oof, that's a good point.
Yeah, tests catch bugs. Code reviews, at least according to Luca, are the single highest leverage activity you have as a tech lead. It is the perfect opportunity for one-to-one mentorship.
Because the context is immediate, right?
Exactly. It's highly concrete. You aren't up there lecturing about abstract, solid principles in some boring Friday afternoon meeting.
Yeah.
You are looking at the exact logic the developer just spent 6 hours agonizing over.
And he approaches this with a really specific tiered strategy, right? Based on the developer's experience level?
Yes. He tailors the mentorship completely. So for junior developers, he focuses heavily on foundational patterns, teaching them the specific language and the conventions of that specific code base.
Got it. And then for mid-level developers?
The strategy shifts entirely. You stop giving them the answers.
Interesting.
You start asking questions that train their peripheral vision. So like if they submit a PR for a data fetching hook, you don't just rewrite it for them. You ask, hey, what happens to this component's state if the API request times out while the user is navigating away to a different route?
Ah, so you force them to see the edge cases they're currently blind to.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then for the senior developers, you aren't reviewing syntax at all. You are engaging in high-level architectural debates about trade-offs. You treat them as peers.
That makes total sense. But across all these tiers, Luca actually has one golden rule that I loved.
Oh, the rule about explaining why.
Yes. Never just tell someone to change the code. Always explain the underlying mechanism.
Yeah, the specific example from his source material illustrates this so perfectly. Think about the last PR comment you left for a junior dev. Did you see a performance problem and just type use memo here?
Yeah, because honestly, that is what the vast majority of senior engineers do. It's fast.
Right, but it's a command. The developer will wrap the function in use memo just to get your green check mark so they can merge the code and go home.
But they learn absolutely nothing.
Nothing. They learn nothing about React's reconciliation process. They don't understand the mechanics.
Yeah.
So Luca's approach is to explicitly map out the cause and effect. You write something like, the current code creates a re-render on every state change because the object reference changes on every single render cycle. Consider using use memo here to stabilize that reference.
Wow. So you are building a mental model they can actually apply to the next 10 components they write.
Exactly. The why becomes transferable knowledge.
And he even takes this a step further with what he calls learning comments. He encourages reviewers to leave non-blocking observations on pull requests.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah. Just dropping a quick note to say, hey, this is a really interesting architectural pattern you use here. Or maybe next time we build a form like this, we might want to explore this other library. It just completely shifts the vibe of the PR.
It does. It moves it from a defensive, hostile gatekeeping exercise into a truly collaborative space.
Yeah.
You are basically upgrading the developer's internal compiler.
Right. Building their capacity to solve future problems without your intervention. But, okay, let me challenge this from the perspective of an engineering manager at, let's say, an early stage startup.
Okay. Play devil's advocate.
We have a runway of 3 months to prove product market fit. I do not have the luxury of long-term ROI. If I spend 20 minutes writing a thoughtful essay on rendering mechanics in a pull request, instead of just fixing the code myself in 2 minutes, I am hurting our shipping velocity.
I hear that all the time.
In survival mode, doesn't this level of mentorship just become a liability?
It feels like a liability today, right? Like this afternoon. But even in a frantic 3-month startup sprint, tech debt and repeated mistakes compound way faster than you think.
So it catches up to you anyway.
Oh, absolutely. If you give a 2-word command, it takes 2 minutes today, sure. But you will spend another 2 minutes fixing that exact same conceptual mistake on Tuesday, and then again on Thursday, and then all of the following week.
Right, because they didn't learn.
Yeah. If you spend 20 minutes teaching the underlying concept once, you effectively clone your own technical judgment. You buy back hours of your own future time, which you desperately need if you want to hit that 3-month milestone.
That actually makes the time investment incredibly pragmatic.
Yeah.
Not just a nice to have.
Exactly.
But wait, this entire mentorship strategy totally falls apart if the developer on the receiving end is, you know, too arrogant or defensive to accept the feedback.
Oh, yeah. You cannot teach a closed mind in a pull request.
So how do you filter for that kind of intellectual humility before they even get access to the code base, like during the interview?
This is where most companies filter for completely the wrong signals.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Luca actively avoids hiring what he calls fanboys of specific frameworks.
Yes.
Like if a candidate comes into an interview and is just deeply partisan, insisting that everything must be written in React or Angular or so, he flags that immediately as a problem.
Because technology is transient, right? But problem solving is permanent. As engineers, we so often conflate knowing the trivia of a specific framework with actual engineering ability.
Oh, 100%.
Luca isn't looking for someone who has just memorized every single React hook. He is looking for an obsession with context.
Right, because React and Vue, they're just tools. An amateur insists that a hammer is the ultimate tool, regardless of whether they're driving a nail or, you know, cutting a piece of wood. A master engineer selects the tool based entirely on the constraints of the environment.
Yeah. Luca wants someone who can articulate those trade-offs. He'll ask, why would you choose a monolithic architecture over micro frontends for a team of 4 people?
And they need to have a real answer.
Right. They need to factor in the timeline, the existing infrastructure, the long-term maintainability. He actually notes in the source material that he can teach someone React in a month, but he cannot teach intellectual honesty and judgment.
You really can't. You can't teach someone to honestly evaluate if a shiny new library actually serves the business logic, or if they just want to use it so they can slap it on their resume.
Exactly. It requires a willingness to be completely objective.
So assuming you actually find these critical thinkers, dropping them into a massive enterprise code base is still terrifying. How do you integrate them without completely overwhelming them?
Luca relies on a very deliberate 4-week graduated onboarding plan. It's specifically engineered to manage the psychological friction of joining a new team.
We have all been there on day one, right? Setting up the local environment, staring at just millions of lines of undocumented code, totally terrified of breaking production.
The imposter syndrome is completely paralyzing.
It is.
Which is exactly why his first week is purely observational.
Just observing.
Yeah. Reading code, looking at merged pull requests, and simply asking questions. There is zero expectation of output, which keeps the new hire's cortisol levels low.
That's smart.
And then week 2 shifts to low stakes action. They pick up really small bug fixes, and it's heavily paired with a senior dev.
That pairing in week 2 is brilliant because fixing a bug provides this immediate hit of dopamine. You solve a puzzle, you see the result, and you begin building a mental map of the codebase architecture, but in a highly constrained, safe environment.
Exactly. Then by week 3, they tackle a small feature independently. And by week 4, they are finally contributing meaningfully to the team's core sprint objectives.
It builds confidence so systematically.
It does. But Lupa points out that the first week, that observation week we talked about, provides a massive hidden value to the company itself if the team is actually willing to listen.
This raises an important question about the culture of stupid questions, right? He emphasizes making it incredibly safe for new hires to just point at things and ask why they work a certain way.
Yeah, because when a new person asks something painfully obvious like, hey, why do we have a 45-minute manual script for deploying this one microservice? They are usually pointing a laser directly at a fundamentally broken process.
A process that the rest of the team has just accepted as totally normal.
Exactly. We normalize the pain. We get so used to working around the fragile parts of our application that we just stop seeing them.
But the new hire has fresh eyes.
Right. And those fresh eyes usually spot the exact things that are secretly destroying our velocity. Technical debt.
Ugh, technical debt. The monster hiding under every code base's bed.
In every single way.
Every engineering team has one. That massive tech debt backlog. I always compare it to a kitchen junk drawer.
Yes.
It's essentially this Jenga tower of ignored tickets, tickets labeled, you know, refactor the legacy authentication flow or upgrade the deprecated data layer. And they just sit in Jira sprint after sprint gathering dust because they offer zero shiny visible business value to the stakeholders.
A product manager is never, ever going to prioritize a ticket that says make the internal APIs cleaner over a ticket that says launch the new enterprise billing feature.
Never.
It is a fundamental mismatch in incentives. So to solve this, Luca applies a highly controversial but honestly incredibly effective approach.
Which is?
Technical debt is a conversation, not a backlog. You do not ask the business for permission to clean the code instead of building features. You just do it alongside the feature work.
He calls it applying the Boy Scout rule at the module level, right?
Yeah.
Always leave the campground slightly cleaner than you found it.
Yes. His time building the markets platform at Vontobel serves as the perfect case study for this.
What happened there?
Well, they had this legacy CMS integration that was just miserable to maintain. Every time a developer touched it, the whole system felt brittle.
So the traditional engineering approach there would be to write a massive epic ticket called Refactor CMS Layer, estimated at like 3 months of uninterrupted work, and present it to management.
And management would immediately reject a three-month freeze on new features.
Of course.
So Luca's team utilized incremental stealth refactoring.
Stealth refactoring. I love that term.
Yeah. Whenever a developer was assigned a new feature that required touching that specific CMS data layer, they were instructed to refactor just the piece they were interacting with, just that small part. Ah, so they improved the health of the module incrementally, leaving it slightly better than they found it.
Exactly. Within 2 quarters, that entire integration was totally stabilized, and they never once had to beg management for a dedicated tech debt sprint.
That is so powerful. But doing this requires an immense, almost uncomfortable level of discipline from the tech lead during sprint planning, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You have to ruthlessly defend your scope. If product asks for a feature, the lead has to look them in the eye and say, this feature takes 5 points, not 3, because we have to refactor the underlying data layer to support it safely.
You basically bake the cleanup into the cost of doing business.
You have to.
Yeah.
Code health is not an optional luxury. It is the structural foundation that actually allows you to ship those shiny features in the first place.
Okay, so we've covered architectural boundaries using PRs as mentorship, hiring for context, and this awesome stealth refactoring.
Yeah, but everything we've discussed so far relies on logic. They are structural or code-based solutions. But the hardest part of leading engineering teams is the variable that completely defies logic.
The human algorithm.
Yes, yeah. The human algorithm. As engineers, we like to think we operate purely on rationality, but I mean, come on, we have egos.
Huge egos.
We have off weeks where our focus is completely shattered. We get into passionate, heated disagreements over like state management libraries.
Yeah.
We burn out, we get poached by competitors. Managing the code is simple compared to managing the people.
It really is, and Luca is incredibly transparent about this reality. His core philosophy for navigating all of this human friction is just radical transparency.
Radical transparency.
Yeah, trust is the currency of leadership, and transparency is exactly how you meant it.
So what does this actually look like for a listener trying to unify a fractured, cynical team right now? Like, how do you operationalize transparency?
Well, it starts with the leader's own vulnerability. If you make a technical architectural decision, you share the complete reasoning with the team. Especially if it's an uncomfortable compromise that was driven by harsh business deadlines.
You don't hide the reality.
Right. If a project is falling behind, you don't hide the metrics or sugarcoat the status to stakeholders. You state the reality plainly to everyone, and you outline the specific steps to remediate it.
And crucially, if you, the tech lead, make a bad call, you have to own it loudly and publicly. Mm. You cannot sweep your own bugs under the rug.
No, you can't.
By standing up in a retro and saying, hey, I chose to adopt this library, it was the wrong tool for our scale, and here's how we pivot, you set the behavioral standard for the entire room.
You prove through your own action that it is actually safe to fail, analyze, and learn.
You're engineering psychological safety.
Exactly. And Luca outlines a specific tactical approach he used at UBS to scale this culture across a massive enterprise. It's a concept he calls cross-area cohesion.
Because at a company the size of UBS, you don't just have one engineering team.
No, you have dozens of discrete squads working on isolated fragments of a massive global application.
And the natural gravity of that structure pushes squads to become deeply siloed.
Deeply. They might push code to the exact same massive repository, but they never actually speak to one another.
So how did he break that isolation?
He enforced structural practices that forced the teams to intersect. For example, he instituted regular cross-team code reviews.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So suddenly, a developer on the payment squad is reviewing the architectural approach of the authentication squad.
That's brilliant.
He also created shared architectural decision records, ADRs, so the entire engineering organization had full visibility into why global technical choices were being made.
And he also implemented rotating pair programming across different team boundaries, right?
He did. Think about the empathy that generates.
Oh, I can imagine. When you are forced to sit down and pair program with someone from an entirely different domain, you suddenly experience the unique latency constraints and the weird legacy database pressures they are dealing with daily.
It completely shatters that toxic us versus them mentality that plagues so many enterprise tech departments. You stop operating as a collection of defensive, isolated squads, and you start behaving like one unified, transparent engineering organism.
Man, pulling all of these threads together, Luca Melli's experience across startups and financial giants points to one really undeniable thesis. Technical leadership is decidedly not about writing the best code.
No, writing the best code is the domain of the individual contributor. The job of a technical leader is environmental design.
Environmental design, I like that.
Yeah, it is about creating the structural conditions, the architectural bumpers, the psychologically safe mentorship culture, the transparent communication where sustainable, high-quality decisions emerge naturally from the team itself.
Which brings us to a really profound final thought. In the source material, there is a passing mention of another essay Luca wrote titled Yegini Beats D-Dry. Now, as engineers, we all know these acronyms. DRY is don't repeat yourself. It's the principle of abstracting code so you don't duplicate logic. And Yeji and I stands for you aren't going to need it.
Right. Yeji and I is a foundational principle warning against premature abstraction.
Because as engineers, we have a terrible habit of over-engineering our applications.
We really do. We try to anticipate complex future requirements, and we build these massive, convoluted abstractions for scaling problems that simply do not exist yet.
And Luca argues that this premature abstraction destroys more code bases than a little bit of duplicated code ever will.
But if we connect that engineering principle to everything we've just discussed about leadership, it makes you wonder, are we guilty of premature abstraction in our management style?
Wow. That is a brilliant way to look at it.
Think about it. How many engineering managers invent incredibly complex workflows? They establish bloated agile ceremonies, 5 different tiers of Jira ticketing, and hyper-complicated Git branching strategies to solve interpersonal or organizational alignment problems they might face when they scale to 100 developers.
But right now, their team only has 6 people.
Exactly.
What if we just applied Yaji and I to leadership? You aren't going to need it. Instead of over-engineering the team's entire operational process, what if a tech lead focused purely on removing the immediate tangible friction directly in front of their team today?
Yes. Clean up the code review culture on the very next pull request. Defend the scope of your current sprint from feature creep today.
Be entirely transparent about a single technical mistake you made this week.
Exactly. Human beings resist perfect, overly abstracted systems. The best leaders don't try to build an infallible, complex management machine. They just keep clearing the mud out of the water day by day so the engineers can actually see where they're going.
Don't over-engineer the human element. Just focus on the friction in front of you.
That's the secret.
Thank you so much for taking this deep dive with us today. We highly encourage you to look at your own squads, the way you review code, and your own processes, and see where you can start applying these patterns in your workspace this week. Keep clearing that mud, and we'll see you next time.